the sports capital of Alabama. This is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. And on Fox Sports Central Alabama at 98.3 FM in Birmingham and Sylacauga. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome into The Drive. It is the Tuesday edition. Hope everybody having a good day, a gorgeous-looking day, a little bit warmer as we've got, is it Indian summer or whatever? I mean, it's going to feel like summer. I think we're going to get around 90 tomorrow, but hope everybody having a good day. Welcome in. It's the Tuesday edition of The Drive, and after a trip outside the studio yesterday, and our thanks to the folks over at Franklin Tire for having us there, and we'll be back again there next Monday. We're back in the WOW Business Studio.
That's right, and you can get 2 months free on super fast business internet when you switch to WOW. Details at switchtowowbusiness.com.
Hour number one of The Drive brought to you by our friends at Kia of Auburn on South College and kiaofauburn.com. Kia of Auburn, where you're always number one, and also the sponsor of our hotline, where we welcome guests who can't be with us in person, and, of course, your calls. And the number to get you through is 334-321-1390.
And you can also text the show. You can drop a line to the ESPN 106.7 text box at 334-564-1840.
So anything on your mind today? We have our regular Tuesday lineup of guests joining us. Barrett Salee will join us at the bottom of this hour, and we'll talk about the SEC. Probably get a little Braves mentioned because a big series starting. The Braves really just need to win one, and they'll be in, and they're going to be in. Let's see. The Braves have potentially 7 games to play, but 6 games, 3 against the Phillies, and they are 2.5 games up, with the Phillies having 6 games to play. So if they can win one, that would put them 3.5 up, and all they'd have to do is win one more ball game. They would clinch a tie for the division if they just win one game against the Phillies. They win two, they're in.
Right. The Braves, if they were to sweep the Phillies in these next 3 games, would win the division outright.
I think if they win two, they're in. Right?
I don't know if they clinch with two.
Think about it.
Can't the Phillies set up?
They're 2.5 up. They'd be.
I don't think the Braves can clinch. Yeah, I don't think the Braves can clinch the division without sweeping. And so as long as they avoid a sweep, like you said, you know, if they can win one game, they can put the Phillies in a lot of pressure, and winning two gets them on the
they're a game and a half up with 3 to play.
Right, and winning two puts the Phillies, you know, on the rope. So yeah, so, I mean, obviously you want to take it one game at a time. The Phillies are starting 3 good starting pitchers these next 3 days in Wheeler, Nola, and Kyle Gibson. So it's not going to be easy to win any of these games for the Atlanta Braves. But, yeah, they go into the series with the advantage heading into the final week of the season.
And the Braves, as the Phillies have been, are really playing well.
Yep.
I mean, they needed to get things turned around on the road, and they did. Winding up sweeping the Padres, so
difficult September schedule too for the Braves, and they still have managed to do enough to be in position to win the division this week.
That is right. So yeah, I'm sure we'll get a little Braves talk in with Barrett as well as college football, the wild and wacky world of college football, where, you know, it's very difficult to understand, you know, who is really, really good. I think there are a lot of pretty good teams. There are a lot of teams, though, that, as we have seen, that if they don't play well, they can lose to just about anybody.
Right, and I think there's a lot of debate out there. Like, if you're willing to acknowledge that right now Alabama and Georgia look like the two best teams in the country, then the question would become who's number 3.
Maybe Oregon, right?
Or
now.
Oregon is 3 in the polls.
Yeah.
You know, people would, you know, I mean, Penn State and Iowa are right behind them. Oklahoma was expected to be there going into the season, but I don't know if they've been, even though they're undefeated, I don't know if they've been as impressive as people
were
expecting.
Well, they haven't been nearly as impressive as people had hoped.
That's right. And then, you know, lurking there at the bottom of the top 10, you know, don't look now, but it's the Arkansas Razorbacks there at 4-0. Notre Dame undefeated as well, at the end. So, yeah, there does seem to be there's the chance for a new face or two in the college football playoff, certainly, through the first couple of weeks of the season. And, yeah, beyond Alabama and Georgia, it seems like a lot of teams are something of a question mark in college football.
And it is a big weekend in the SEC. There are some fun games. Auburn and Ole Miss have not played an SEC game yet, but boy, will they! They both go on the road. Of course, Ole Miss at Alabama is the 2:30 CBS game. But you mentioned Arkansas, top 10 matchup with Arkansas at Georgia this weekend to get things started at 11:00.
That's right. And Ole Miss about to begin playing 9 games in 9 weeks, having the bye week. When they had it following the Tulane game on the 18th, they will begin conference play, like you said. You know, Auburn and Ole Miss, the only teams in the SEC that haven't played a league game yet. But this is going to be the first of 8 conference games and a home visit from Liberty. Hugh Freeze will be visiting Oxford in November as well. So you've got an interesting schedule for Ole Miss that gets underway with a trip to Tuscaloosa on Saturday.
And you know, really, I mean, in the SEC, nobody's talking about this one. I'm interested in Mississippi State at Texas A&M as well, and Florida at Kentucky.
Florida,
I mean, there's some really interesting ball games.
Florida at Kentucky is a game I've been wondering about. I might just end up being wrong about Florida all year because I don't know, if the offense is enough. But they're getting it done. They pulled away from Tennessee. They're a comfortable favorite, 9 points at Kentucky. This week, I didn't see much of the Kentucky South Carolina game. I know it was pretty close throughout. South Carolina might have some talent there on defense in the front 7. So, you know, I don't know if people are maybe overreacting to Kentucky only scoring 16 points in Columbia on Saturday. Let's talk about those two games, Bill. I mean, do you have a feeling about Kentucky or Mississippi State? First of all, being able to put a real scare into their more highly touted opponent?
I think State can. I really do. I think Texas A&M's offense is a mess right now. And Mississippi State's defense is not bad. I mean, they're pretty good on defense. This could be very much like the A&M game this past week. We could have another, you know, throwback kind of ball game, a 16-10, you know, 20, first team to 20 could win comfortably.
Yeah, A&M held to 272 yards in Arlington against Arkansas on Saturday. Mississippi State had a couple of key players defensively banged up in the LSU game. But I agree with you. I think there doesn't seem to be, certainly with the problems A&M is having offensively,
right,
there doesn't seem to be a huge gap between Mississippi State and Texas A&M. I think they could, and A&M just played a really tough physical game against a team that takes the fight to you.
Well,
I know so did Mississippi State.
Yeah, I was going to say, they both are coming off losses that hurt.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. I don't know if I would give one team the advantage in that regard. But no, you're right.
I think A&M,
I've been more impressed with State.
I have too. Yeah. And I think A&M feels like it has more to lose. So State may be a little looser going into this ball game, even though it's at College Station.
Yeah, and I don't even know if it's pressure. You know what I mean? I think some of it's just, like, A&M's, you know, it doesn't seem to be mental mistakes. You know what I mean? It seems like there's a talent issue, and there's a, you know, at certain positions, there's a question of, can they win these matchups against SEC teams? And I guess the other thing maybe aiding Mississippi State would be that this game comes between A&M players going to Dallas and A&M players going to Tuscaloosa, because that's the game next week, isn't it? Next Saturday is A&M at Alabama. So it's a good spot for Mississippi State.
It's a great spot on the schedule for Mississippi State. You're right.
Yeah. I mean, I would just think that, you know, playing a team like A&M, granted they might want to refocus after losing to Arkansas, but playing, if you're Mississippi State, getting a team the week before the Alabama game is a good spot, because they might be tempted to look ahead to that matchup a week later against the number one team in the country.
Yeah, I'm really intrigued by that one. Florida, Kentucky, I'm not sure what to think of Kentucky. I've been more impressed by Florida than I thought I would be to this point. Kentucky's just won so far. It hadn't been anything like eye popping or wow. Take a look at that. Just sort of quietly winning their games.
There are a couple of undefeated teams in the Power Five that it's so unusual to see them undefeated as September turns to October.
You're talking both in the SEC?
Well, I think there's you could point out a couple in the SEC. I mean, I'm looking at Wake Forest there at 4-0.
Okay, well, I was going to say Arkansas. It's the first time since what? 03?
That's
right. That they've started 4-0.
That's right. I mean, you've got some teams that are, you know, a little foreign to the top 25 and foreign to being undefeated this late in the year. So, maybe people are still in wait and see mode. If the secret will be out about Kentucky. I mean,
if they beat Florida,
I think they're in the also getting votes. You know, they're not there in the top 25, but they're in the next crop of teams. If they beat Florida, yeah, the secret's out. I mean, 5-0 Kentucky is and so then
the SEC could just be completely turned upside down with a couple of upsets this weekend. Well, I don't see it happening, and I really can't almost imagine how it would happen. But if Arkansas were to beat Georgia, I don't think it's beyond the limit of the imagination to see Ole Miss beating Alabama. I don't think they're going to do it, but it would not be the biggest stunner. I would be much more surprised if Arkansas goes into Athens and wins.
That was going to be my question. Like that, I was about to ask you of Arkansas and Ole Miss. Do you think one of them has a much better shot than the other of coming away with a win on Saturday?
Sure. I mean, like I said, I don't think. I'm not going to pick either one of them to win, but absolutely Ole Miss has a better shot. The Arkansas-Georgia game, for Arkansas to win, they'd have to play a perfect game defensively, not have any breakdowns and allow big plays, and win a 10-6 game or something like that, 13-10. But Georgia's been clicking offensively lately, and it's in Athens. Who's Georgia got next week?
Next week, Georgia's got Auburn.
Oh, that's right. Well,
in Auburn.
That's right. What am I talking about?
Well, we're not used to having it.
You're right. I was just thinking about looking ahead. I just don't know that Georgia's going to be.
I don't think Georgia's looking ahead to anybody.
No,
like
no.
I think teams look ahead to Georgia right now. It's not about Georgia.
Ole Miss. Lane Kiffin has been working on this since last year. I know Nick Saban has been against Lane, too, because that was an embarrassment for Alabama last year. That was the most yards an Alabama team has ever allowed in a ball game in a comfortable win, in a three-score win.
And I minutes ago, I was talking about South Carolina having some talent on the front seven and you know, giving Kentucky a hard time defensively. And I know that game was in Columbia. Same South Carolina defense gave up 500-plus yards to Georgia in Athens.
And that's what I'm talking about. Georgia looks like the most well-rounded team in the league, if not the country.
And I mean, we talked to Jake Crane, who said, you know, last week if he had a vote, you know, Georgia would be his number one team in the country. I know there are a few other voters in both polls going with the Bulldogs. I'm inclined to agree, but I'm worried that, you know, it's just we keep selling Arkansas short. You know what I mean? Like
right.
That's the one thing I'm worried about. Because I agree with you. I think looking at it, I would be more surprised by Arkansas going into Athens and winning than Ole Miss going into Tuscaloosa, because it seems like Ole Miss has an explosive offense that if this game got really crazy, if this turned into a 49-45 sort of football game, maybe Ole Miss has the horses to keep up in that sort of thing.
Or if Bryce Young makes a mistake or two, and that Ole Miss offense could get out to a multi-score lead.
Yeah, and I mean, just trying to picture a way Georgia wins or a way Arkansas wins this football game, it seems like
Arkansas does
well, their calling cards are all things Georgia does better.
That is exactly not a great matchup.
And for most of the teams in the SEC, Arkansas can say what we do well, we do better than you. Mm-hmm. Like most of the time in the SEC this year, Arkansas can look at their strengths and say, our strengths, match up really well against, you know, this team. Georgia is the exception to that rule. Georgia defensively, I think, yeah, they're not afraid of Arkansas at the line of scrimmage. They feel like that they can hang. You know, everywhere Arkansas feels like they're doing well, you know, Georgia seems up for the challenge, and that's why, despite this hot start to the season, Georgia's a three touchdown favorite Saturday in Athens.
334-321-1390. So a lot of things to talk about here on the Tuesday edition of The Drive. We'd love for you to join in again. Barrett Salee will join us at the bottom of this hour. Jake Crane of the J-Boy Show, who Dan just mentioned a minute or so ago, will be joining us next hour at the bottom. And around them, your phone calls are welcome on the Kia of Auburn hotline, 334-321-1390. Come on in and join us here on the Tuesday Drive.
Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com and on Fox Sports Central Alabama at 98.3 FM in Birmingham and Sylacauga. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502 or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Tuesday afternoon. Bill and Dan here in the Wow Business Studio with Drew at the controls. And let's go ahead and get to the Kia of Auburn hotline. And John is up first. Hey, John.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
What's up, John?
Not a whole lot. I had some thoughts about the about Arkansas and, a statement about Georgia, and also just a quick question about the highly anticipated Auburn quarterback situation.
I will state about Georgia, I agree with you guys. I actually think, being a diehard Auburn fan, I actually think they're the most complete team in the country. Now, as far as Arkansas goes, I wish everybody kind of pumped the brakes on those guys. They beat a Texas team that's kind of rebuilding. They beat an A&M team that has no offense. Mm-hmm. And they're facing Ole Miss, Georgia, you know, or Georgia, Ole Miss, and Auburn. I mean, that's three L's there. So I kind of feel that, you know, Arkansas is, you know, they're really just, you know, because of their schedule. That's why they're hyped up right now. I really don't believe in that hype.
I want to believe, John. I really do. You are a lot more confident in this Auburn team than I am to immediately say that Fayetteville is an L for Arkansas. I mean, look, Auburn can win that game. I'm not ready to say Auburn's definitely going into Fayetteville and winning.
No, but it, that one falls at not a bad place. If you're going to have to go to Fayetteville, play Arkansas after they've gone through that gauntlet.
Okay, I'm just not ready to look at Arkansas' schedule and say they're going to definitely lose the next three games.
But it's interesting, John. I mean, people were talking, and you know, Arkansas, and I don't think it's
his point about A&M and Texas
a stretch. And it's saying that their overall schedule was as tough as anybody's in the country. But you're right, Texas A&M has been a team that all along, even with Haynes King, I wondered how easily they were just going to plug and play on the offensive line and have the offense click the way it did with a fourth-year starter in Kellen Mond a year ago. Right. And they have struggled offensively. I think they're going to continue to struggle offensively, even when they get Haynes King back. And Texas is a team that's going to have its moments, but they're going to be up and down. I mean, what they put up 70 last week, but I mean, they're going to have to be going against teams that give them some big plays to do that. Now, granted, their Arkansas schedule is going to get a lot tougher, but I love Sam Pittman. I love what he's doing.
Absolutely.
Credit to them for everything that they have been able to turn
and
get aimed at. They lost 19 straight conference games.
Yeah, when he
before,
showed up.
Yeah, but before he finally started getting things turned around. But, they still have a ways to go before they're competitive talent-wise, but they believe and they will play hard as anybody you'll play. But
competitive talent-wise with the best teams in the country.
With the upper, I think with the best teams in the league.
Yeah.
Still, I mean, they're not in the upper half of the league talent-wise.
Yeah, the story on game day, I don't know if you guys happen to see it, that was awesome. I really enjoy that other teams in the SEC are kind of on the rise, which is great. One week you look, they're not ranked, and the next week they, you know, two wins and they're in the top 10.
Right.
Kind of, you know, it's just like, wow, whoa, let's pump the brakes on these guys. But anyway, I'll get to a quick question. I'll hang up. I'll let you guys debate on this. As far as
you know, the quarterback situation. I'm very appreciative of, you know, how much an Auburn man that Bo is, and what he contributes to the football team. And, you know, even after everything, I'm still a fan of Bo. I think that Harsin, you know, just on this trip here, I know he hasn't really came out and said it yet, but I just really have it in my heart that he's actually going to start Bo just because it's on the road. And maybe he'll play both guys if Bo struggles. But now Bo knows, hey, if I'm overselling people like I am on the normal, you know, I can get a chance to get pulled. So, but, I commend Coach Harsin on that. It's something that needed to happen just to kind of wake us up. But, this Finley kid, you know, I like him too, but, I'm still a Bo guy through and through, but I appreciate your time, guys. Thanks a lot.
John, I think you and I are pretty much on the same page. That's sort of the way I look at this. And again, I have no idea what Brian Harsin is going to do, but I do feel that the emotion of TJ going back to Baton Rouge and their knowledge, yes, he has knowledge of them, although I think they probably have better knowledge of TJ than he does of their defense now, because they've changed coordinators. TJ, I'm sure he's, you know, matured some from his time there in Baton Rouge, but I think their knowledge of him and his emotions going in would lead me to think that, you know, Brian Harsin watched these guys all through the summer, and Bo was his guy. And he said, remember, he said he's the guy until he's not. And that's he right. Hasn't said he's not yet. He commended TJ Finley for being prepared as a backup quarterback this past Saturday. Again, I'm looking for any little tidbits here or there. I'm thinking that it's Bo's job until it's not, and TJ has shown he can come in and do this. I agree with you. I think Bo probably gets the start, but TJ is in the game plan.
If Bo is healthy enough to play, and I maintain it's an if Bo's healthy enough to go out there and be Auburn's starting quarterback, if it's TJ Finley instead and Bo's healthy enough to be out there, that's very, very important. Like if you're starting with the importance of this LSU game on Saturday, if you're going with TJ Finley instead of Bo Nix when Bo Nix is healthy enough to be your quarterback, that's a very important decision. Auburn's making it because that's a quarterback change. Like that is
right.
I mean that's all there is. And you're making a quarterback change before conference play starts. That's significant. I still think it's Bo Nix's job if he's healthy. But I have no idea how they're going to play it this week, and I suspect we're not going to know for sure until
Saturday until
Auburn has the ball on Saturday in Baton Rouge.
That's right. Actually, I'll wait one more quick statement if you guys don't mind.
Sure.
You know, the Penn State game, kind of going back a little bit. I made a pretty good discovery as far as my part and as far as Auburn's part. When Auburn had that turnover coming out of halftime. And we went down, I believe it was 11, was it 11 15. Points at that time?
We went down 11 points, then had a 15-play drive. Right, my bad.
Yes. That drive right there, that's what I was going to mention. That drive right there, I thought previous teams in the past would have folded under pressure.
On the road, I figured that
Malzahn would have panicked and tried to get into the game or – was kind of like, okay, we're okay. Let's do what we do. Let's run the football. Let's get back in this game. And that drive where they ran the ball 13 times, I mean, that right there to me alone said what all I needed to know about Coach Harsin and what the job he's going to do at Auburn. That right there showed that the boys were ready. I know that Georgia State didn't look like it, but again, you know, I believe that was just one of those games. Hey, Let's put it behind us and let's just move forward. So, but I do appreciate your time, guys. Thanks a lot.
Great stuff, John. And yeah, I mean, those games are the ones you just can't lose. There are an awful lot of near misses. You can look back for Auburn and other teams. As long as you don't lose them, then all is not lost.
If you lose that one, then
you could be in deep, deep trouble.
I would say they're also the games where it's really, and I don't have coaching experience in this regard, but I would imagine those are the games where it's really tough to get your team as focused
a week after the whiteout. Hopefully that's what gets your teams focused after that. Let's get one more call because I know we got our bottom of the hour break coming up. Sammy is up next. Hey, Sammy.
Hey, guys, how are y'all?
Good, man. It's great to hear from you. How you been?
Yeah, I'm doing great. I'm doing great. Trying to survive in Oxford with all the Ole Miss people going crazy over here.
Just think if they were able to pull off the win, man. I don't know.
Well, there are a whole bunch of them going. I know that.
I know that.
My son's a senior over here, and he's got a crew, and they're heading over there. So, but I'm pulling for him, I can tell you that. But, guys, I look at this Auburn team, particularly offensively, and it caught me off the ledge. But just as an outsider, just look at this team. We've got one great player on offense, and that's it. Our offensive line is average, maybe an average, a little bit better. Our receivers are average to a little bit better. Our quarterback play right now is not that great. We've got a great running back. Am I wrong on that?
Maybe a couple of great running backs, but yeah, I understand.
And here's the worst thing. It scares the heck out of me. Is do you think Tank looks at our offensive line next year and says, to heck with this, I'm going to go somewhere else?
I'd be surprised.
And transfer?
I don't think Tank needs to go somewhere else to improve. I'd be more afraid of Tank deciding to skip a year of college football and just prepare for the draft than spending another year in college football somewhere else. Because, you know, I think he's already, you know what I mean? Like, that's,
yeah, he's playing on the biggest, stage as he's going to find. No, I don't think so. Hey, Sammy, we've got a hard break coming up. We've got about 20 seconds. Any other final thoughts?
I'd appreciate it. Thanks much.
Yeah. It's great hearing from Sammy from Oxford.
Don't disagree too much about the passing game and his assessment there.
No, but we'll see. I mean, there are a lot of teams that up and down. We had thought the defense would be carrying this team to this point, and that's as big a concern to me as it is offensively.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, we're going to talk with Barrett Salee when we come back on the other side. Stick with us here on the Tuesday Drive.
To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Tuesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the WOW Business Studio. Drew once again at the controls, and it's Tuesday afternoon, and that means it's time for us to be joined by our regular Tuesday guest at this time, and that's Barrett Salee from CBSSports.com, SiriusXM, and I was thinking probably the ballpark today, Barrett. How you doing, man?
I am good. Unfortunately, even though I have season tickets, I can't go to a single game this week because I am in quarantine because my 10-year-old has COVID.
Oh, so, man, what a bummer.
He's fine, but I was, I had season tickets to split them with my buddy, and I was planning on going to four of these games, and now I am just going to be sitting here.
That's terrible news. Thanks for being responsible and quarantining yourself instead of going to watch these playoff games. You know, we're rooting for your guys to seal the deal here. How are you feeling about the Phillies series before it gets underway?
I feel okay after how the Padres series went, specifically the Saturday night game. That was awesome. That was one of the most ridiculous games I've seen in a while. So, feeling all right. The pitching set up right. Both teams have their best going. So, I'm confident. Having a, buffer going in certainly is huge because, it puts a lot of pressure on Philly. They're going to be the ones that are feeling the heat here a little bit. So, wish I could go. I'm excited. I don't necessarily think we're going to sweep them, but I would certainly like to get this over. Don't have to. The problem is, Bill, and I was thinking about this, Don Mattingly and the Marlins are just petty enough to roll over against the Mets, against the Phillies, and that would be kind of a par for the course for that.
Yeah, but then all the Braves just would need to win one if they can win the series. I mean, the main thing is don't get swept. I mean, if you win tonight, then the pressure's all on them. All you've got to do is win another one here. And then that any loss, a bump for them or a win for you,
I kind of. I mean, Wheeler's been pitching really, really well for Philly lately. I kind of think, and I know Charlie Morton's been good too.
He's an Atlanta guy, you know. I kind of think.
I think. I like Philly tonight. Tomorrow's the game with Fried going against Nola. Tomorrow's the game. I think Atlanta.
Yeah, Max was fantastic last time.
If I had to guarantee a Braves win in any of the three games, tomorrow's the one with Fried going against Nola that I would like the Braves to win.
At this time of year, going into October, to be sitting here with the Braves having a chance to win the division and in all likelihood will win the division after all that they've gone through this year, I said it before, like, look, I understand people criticize the Braves for not winning the World Series. I mean, I don't necessarily agree with it because most times they weren't the best team in the nation, but or in the game, but, you know, I get it. If they go to the playoffs this year and get swept, I'm still going to be okay with it because there was no chance that this would be in the discussion, at least in my mind, a few months ago.
No, it didn't look like it. I was going to say, let me segue by pardon some folks here for.
Well,
not,
I have one more Braves note. Are we moving on from baseball?
What you got?
Well, I was going to say if they lose tonight, which is amazing for a team still in excellent position. If the Braves lose tonight, they'd be under 500 at home. In the 2021 season, which is,
and still a game and a half ahead.
Yeah, for a team doing as well as they have in the division, pretty remarkable.
That's a good point, Dan. I was going to say, pardon some folks here for maybe not noticing as much on Saturday with what was going on here on Saturday what appeared to be a sure loss, quarterback change. And then in the aftermath of that and still digesting that and figuring what's going on in quarterback change, hey, let's make a change at wide receiver coach as well before we get into SEC play. So what another wild weekend in the SEC and here in Auburn.
Yeah, man, that game was wild. It was very frustrating to watch Bo Nix do that against Georgia State. I mean, I understand, you know, having some issues against other teams. But the fact that, you know, you're in a position where you can't punch it in the end zone until special teams makes a play, that's not okay. So it was the right move to go to TJ Finley. They should play him as the number one quarterback this weekend. I know, you know, Brian Harsin was noncommittal yesterday about it. But it's very odd to see them make a coaching change four games in.
Oh, yes.
I don't get it. Yeah, I mean, it really is not part of his MO throughout his career. And I mean, I don't know how four games in that he expected the wide receivers to look, but I mean, I think they played all right, you know? So, I don't get it, man. And sounds like there's nothing personal, you know, outside of the, you know, football aspect of things. So I don't know if there was a blow up or whatever, but clearly, you know, he had at least an inkling that this might be a possibility, you know, because he has somebody on staff that he can trust and promote and, you know, not miss a beat.
It feels like it gradually deteriorated. You know, we don't have a lot of insight into what was happening, but it didn't seem like this is something that...
Oh, no, it's nothing had just popped up, because if you go back and recall just about every press conference he had, he would talk about concerns at wide receiver. They have to be aligned. They have to run their routes. They need to catch the ball.
That was
a constant from the spring.
This had been simmering, yes. I guess you could say, for quite some time.
Yeah, and, you know, I don't understand why you wouldn't do it before this. Like, it makes more sense if you're going to do that. You know, maybe try to figure out a solution before you actually start the season. And, again, they haven't been bad. So, I mean, it's just apparently, you know, like you said, simmering for a while.
Man, there are some really interesting games around the league this weekend. Obviously, the marquee matchup is, you know, the rematch of the highest scoring regulation game in SEC history last year between Alabama and Ole Miss in Tuscaloosa. And you know, Lane's been, you know, working on everything he can, but you think Nick is thrilled about after giving up a school record number of points a year ago? I can't wait to see this one.
So pumped. It's going to be so awesome because, you know, Alabama can't run the football either. And I think that's super interesting considering, you know, the best way to keep Matt Corral and Jerry and Ealy and that crew off the field is to run the football. So, you know, there's some questions I still have about, you know, the Ole Miss defense. They've been solid,
they
certainly better than, who have they played? That's the biggest thing. You know, Does it matter? I don't know. Ole Miss's defense was bad against everybody last year. So at least they've improved. But the fact that it's Alabama and the fact that it's a I won't say one-dimensional offense, but more one-dimensional than we're accustomed to is really fascinating to me. And then what do we know about Alabama's defense historically with Nick Saban? They struggle when they have to play tempo, and Lane Kiffin goes fast, and they struggle against quarterbacks who are mobile enough to be a threat but also can stretch the field deep, and that's exactly what Matt Corral is. So it is a wildly intriguing matchup, and I don't think Ole Miss is just hype. I think there's some substance there, and if their defense can come to play, then that could make for an interesting evening in Tuscaloosa.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of the focus is on Matt Corral and what he's going to be able to do against the Alabama defense, but it seems like there's a little bit of pressure on the Alabama offense to perform against a team as dangerous as Ole Miss.
Yeah, there's no doubt. It's I think, likely to be a shootout. The identity of Alabama, the DNA, is as, you know, an offensively driven team. So there's no doubt there's pressure on Bryce Young. If he gets down 10, you know, which, you know, for most Alabama teams isn't surmountable because obviously, you know, they're able to score at will. But, you know, if Bryce Young gets down 10 and he looks across the sideline and sees a hot Matt Corral, there's no doubt that they could be pressing a little bit.
Of course, things get started with a game that Arkansas would love to have be a 180 from what we're talking about there in Tuscaloosa. Because if JT Daniels, the Georgia offense, gets things going, this could, you know, puncture that the bubble, the perfect bubble that Arkansas has had to this point. But what a story Arkansas has been, and who would have thought this is a top 10 matchup heading into Athens Saturday?
Yeah, would never have thought this would have been a top 10 matchup. And yeah, Arkansas wants to make this as ugly as possible. And I think if you're Georgia, that's fine that they want to do that because it doesn't matter. You know, that offense, I think, has figured itself out. They've been successful with JT Daniels banged up. They've been successful with Stetson Bennett, and they've been successful with JT Daniels healthy, and they've got weapons, and they're getting Darnell Washington back. So, yeah, it is it's an interesting spot for Arkansas because I don't really think anybody thought that A&M's offense was going to go run up and down the field just by the way they're built. Georgia can do that, and they're a significantly better defense, especially up front. And Arkansas's, you know, strength is along the offensive line. I don't know if you can block Jordan Davis. I mean, that's a little bit of a different task. So I don't think it's going to be close. I think this is when the Arkansas Cinderella story kind of comes to a crashing halt.
Right. We were talking about it a while ago, and I said, yeah, I just can't come up with a way for Arkansas to win unless Georgia beats themselves, because Georgia appears to be significantly better than everybody on defense.
Yeah, 100%. That Georgia defense is just filthy. And, you know, the likelihood of KJ Jefferson lighting them up through the air, I just don't see it.
No. Couple of other interesting games before we get to your thoughts on Auburn and LSU. Mississippi State is at A&M. I think this could be a heck of a ball game. Like you said, I don't think A&M's going to be lighting it up, you know, for a while. And State's pretty salty on defense, and they'll sling it. So I mean, this one A&M needs to watch out, or they could have a 2-game losing streak.
Well, I don't think it's going to be a close game at all. You know, I think A&M, you know, they had the passing attack for Arkansas had more success than a lot of folks, myself included, thought. But there was a reason A&M was the top-ranked passing defense in basically every metric going in. And I still think now they're fifth in the nation in pass defense. And if they don't have to worry about the run, and against Mississippi State, they don't.
Nope.
Then I think that secondary is fully capable of keeping that Mississippi State offense in single digits. And if that's the case, look, I know A&M's offense is a disaster, but I would still think that the combination of Spiller, A-Chain, and Anaya Smith and those guys will find a way to at least, you know, get in the end zone a couple times, which to me is going to be more than enough to win that game.
All right, what about Florida at Kentucky? Kentucky is as quiet a 4-0 SEC team as we've seen in a while.
I just can't get a read on Florida, right? I mean, that's a team that seems like they, you know, that they could be dangerous offensively, but at the same time, it's tough to trust it.
Well, it's because they've gone from a great passing attack to a great rushing team, you know, overnight.
Yeah, and I agree with you. It's hard to sort of figure out exactly what they are, and you know, Dan likes to prove that he's the smartest person in the room. But he made the adjustment against Alabama to be more multidimensional rushing as a rushing attack, and it's worked. And I think that actually has helped sort of, you know, make him recognize that you don't necessarily have to force something to make your offense click. And right now, Emory Jones isn't a good passer. So, you know, but Kentucky, you're right, I can't get a read on them either. You know, Will Levis has been up and down. They're skill players are talented, but they kind of disappear every once in a while. And their defense is solid, but I mean, I feel like Florida's offense, when all else fails, Dan can just go back and do exactly what he did in the second half against Alabama and be successful. And I don't think Kentucky can slow that down. Not for you know, a full four quarters.
And then Auburn LSU. It's going to be really interesting. One thing that we have learned here early on is Brian Harsin doesn't care what anybody else thinks. He's going to do what he feels is best. It'll be really interesting because we've had so many back and forths with folks trying to, you know, why it's going to be this guy, why it's going to be the other guy, why it's going to be TJ going back home. But does LSU know so much about TJ, and will his emotions be too high? I mean, whatever. This is a really intriguing ball game, and LSU trying to get back on track. That was a big win. A lot of people thought they were going to go down in Starkville last week.
Yeah, it's such a weird situation for Auburn. You know, trying to figure out how to break the streak that, you know, hadn't won in Baton Rouge since '99, and having a quarterback issue. Look, I think it should be TJ Finley. You know what you're getting from Bo Nix, especially on the road. 13 touchdowns, 12 picks on the road as a starter. Or neutral site, road and neutral site. You know that's what he's going to be. And with TJ Finley, you're sort of guessing, right? You saw him handle pressure well last week. That's awesome. With the emotion of playing LSU come back to bite him, maybe. He was dreadful
on the
with
road.
LSU against Auburn on the road last year. You know, but he's unknown. And so do you prefer that, knowing what he did last week, or do you prefer the known with Bo Nix? I think you need to go with Finley. With that said, I think Harsin will probably go with Bo Nix.
I think you'll see them both, because I wonder
who would
be better coming off the bench. Bo's never done it. TJ at least did it last week. I just don't know. It's going to be really interesting to see how they handle the quarterback spot.
Yeah, well, you know what? It's there's always something with that matchup.
You're right.
That LSU-Auburn series, man, it's wild. So I'm excited to see what happens. I know Auburn fans are probably not excited that it's an 8 p.m. Central Time kickoff in Death Valley. So if they're going to break that streak, they're going to have to do it at probably the most inopportune time.
I think I'd rather watch my team play a road game at 8 p.m. than go to a home game at 8 p.m. Like, if it were up to me, I would rather be the road team in an 8 p.m. kickoff game than the home team than the home team in that regard, because you know, we had a caller earlier, I think it was yesterday, mention these fans might be tired by the time this game's going. I mean, we're going to 11, you know, 11
or passed out.
Exactly. I mean
I was going to say tired's a nice way of putting it.
Yeah, diplomatic ways. I just think that's it could be too late as a start, you know, for the maximum home field advantage effect.
Well, that also might mean that we're all getting old, and it sounds like a lot of work.
Well, it does mean that, Barrett, we are. Oh, man. Well, yeah.
But no, you're right. Maybe they have been a little, and they sell alcohol there now.
That is right.
So, I mean, you get an extra, you know, glass of a Jack and Coke before you go in. You know, that's a pretty big step if you're expecting to also have a couple of $10 investment beers.
Well, my understanding, Barrett, is that they sell alcohol in the rest of the city too, leading up to kickoff at Tiger Stadium.
Do they?
And that's where it might really matter.
It's been known to be available to congenial folks at less than that too, if you're around the stadium.
Good prices, is that what you're saying? Competitive rates?
Yeah, that's what I'm talking
about. Very competitive rates.
Oh yeah. Oh man, great stuff as always, Barrett. Let everybody know what the, you know, you know, what, where they can find all your good stuff and what you got coming up.
Yeah, we got the SEC Super Preview tomorrow on CBS Sports HQ, as well as my weekly picks and analysis column. There will be some talk about Auburn LSU in that. And, yeah, we'll have plenty of coverage throughout the day and night, deep into the night on Saturday.
Sounds great, Barrett. Man, thanks. Good luck to the Bravos. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, y'all, too.
All right. Barrett Saleh joining us, as he does every Tuesday. And we need to get to our final break of hour number one. Come on in and join us here on the Tuesday Drive.
The Drive is the Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. And on Fox Sports Central Alabama at 98.3 FM in Birmingham and Sylacauga. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two of the Tuesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the WOW Business Studio.
That's right, and you can get 2 months free on super fast business internet when you switch to WOW. Details at switchtowowbusiness.com.
Hour number two of the Drive brought to you by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. And we welcome your calls, questions, comments on the Kia of Auburn hotline, Kia of Auburn, where you're always number one. And the number to get you through is 334-321-1390. Interesting call we were having with Steve there at the end of hour number one. And he brought up a couple of thoughts, and we didn't really have time to continue, saying, you know, yes, T.J. Finley is familiar with the field at Tiger Stadium. Yeah, he knows where the play clocks are. T.J. Finley has never been a road quarterback there at Tiger Stadium. And people want to point out how Bo has struggled on the road. Not as large a sample size, but T.J. Finley has struggled much more mightily on the road. And Dan, we were talking about something during the break. Yeah, one of Bo's road losses was 2 years ago when Auburn played the national champions their toughest game of the year.
It just seems to me, and I understand folks who want T.J. Finley to be the quarterback now, but it seems to me to be grasping at straws to view, well, T.J.'s familiar with LSU, so being a road quarterback in Baton Rouge won't be as bothersome to him. I mean, he still has to communicate with his team in that atmosphere, and I don't think having formerly worn the LSU uniform is going to be a shield against that. In fact, if we're talking about experience, I would argue that Bo Nix, having been a road quarterback in Baton Rouge before, is more valuable than the experience T.J. Finley provides, having formerly been on LSU's team. That's not to say that should decide who the quarterback is, but I think people are looking at things, you know, from T.J. Finley's past and also from Bo Nix's past. I mean, I don't think Bo Nix's, you know, how he played in 2019 in Gainesville doesn't seem to be terribly relevant as far as deciding what kind of quarterback he could be this coming Saturday against LSU. But no, I think there's a tremendous difference in being a quarterback for the visiting team. You know, we can ask a caller or two familiar with the Baton Rouge area.
Let's do
that. If it's different being a road quarterback in Baton Rouge than being having the experience you get wearing the friendly colors.
And let's get to our good friend from Baton Rouge, and that's Tex. Hey, Tex.
Well, what sparked my dialing of the number was Dan Peck saying that he thought that the fans may be tired.
That's right. Tex, I've seen people bellyaching
all day.
I've seen people bellyaching about 8 p.m. kicks. I remember LSU had one last year where there was some unhappiness. I think Missouri might have kicked really late last year.
If you saw that on the internet.
I did see that on the internet.
Or had somebody call a sports show, then take that with a grain of salt. I have been there for an 8 o'clock kick that we've had before. I know a lot of people who go there. They're professionals, Dan, and they know and understand when they need to be at the peak. I will just tell you this:
they're like a fighter training for fight night.
If you've ever seen the bus with the Auburn players come through, and the pounding on the side of the bus, and the little kids flipping them the bird, and all these different things going on. If you thought it was bad when we played at 2:30,
oh yeah,
watch the bus pull in around 5 or 5:15. It will be. It wouldn't surprise me if it's a rocking bus, because there has been a
it
time.
Has been in the past.
Remember the smoke in the cigar game afterwards?
Oh,
the bus rocked a little bit on the way out. So I will tell you, they're professionals. They'll be prepared. They'll be ready. And they won't be sleeping at 8 o'clock, and they won't be sleeping at midnight when the game gets over.
If they are,
they'll go back to the tailgate.
Good night for Auburn if they're sleeping at midnight.
Exactly. That being said, I will tell you, I saw Philip Marshall's column about he didn't think it was as loud. And the loudness is not necessarily the issue in Tiger Stadium. It's the brutalness of the fans that's a bigger issue. If you've ever been there, the fence behind the visiting team is slightly closer to the bench than it is on the home team side. So it's very narrow. You go in now. Remember in the day, Bill, we used to cover all the way around that portal that they were, that gate they would go in and out.
Yeah.
Now we're barely on the top and around to the right, so their fans are now hanging over again, howling and screaming and throwing stuff. If there's one thing that I think makes it difficult, more difficult than being a visiting team going into quarterback, is being a kid that grew up a 25-minute ride down the road, who dreamed all his life of playing at LSU, who played there last year, basically lost the game in a road trip to Auburn. I would be confident. I'm confident in saying that. I think that's where he basically lost the job, because of what Kevin Steele did against him in a game that was not very good and for him. And then to be playing really well, and I don't think he's the same quarterback now as he was last year, but speaking of being tired, I think the adrenaline, I heard Coach O this morning, you got to peak at the right time. You got to remember it's at 8 o'clock. It's not 6 or 6:30. So the adrenaline that I think as an athlete would be in me the entire day, knowing I'm going home and I'm going to prove those SOBs that didn't think I could play quarterback for them, I'm going to prove them wrong. I think it would be more difficult on that quarterback going in.
Yeah, Bo, that's what I was thinking.
I get the opinion that Bo thinks. I mean, he reminds me. He may be one of those warriors that was in the movie 300. You know, the story where the 300 fought off the Persians all those days. He would just think, "Hey, we're going to win. I know we only got 20 of us left, but we're going to win." I think that's the approach he would take. I don't think he would be. Now, that doesn't mean necessarily that he's going to play well, because I think that LSU's game plan defensively is going to be the same. They will send
make Auburn beat them passing.
House. Correct.
Yeah.
They will send the house. So you won't be able to run, because they'll be filling every gap as they're coming through. You'll need extra protection. We're going to have to complete balls, because guys will be open. We just got to make sure we get the ball in the right place, because they will bring the house in this game.
I don't doubt it.
And they will go after us. I don't know if you've seen the picture, I'll try and find it, of Coach O's reaction to the deep ball Bo threw late in the game last year to go up 48-11.
No, I have not seen that. I would imagine that we probably couldn't play the audio of that on the air.
No, you could not. Well, you can't play half the audio of him. But anyway, so he's a few steps on the field with his hands on his hips, staring to the opposite side, and he is not happy. I think he goes after us hard, especially in the beginning. Stingley's not going to play, and if he does, he'll half-heartedly play. He's got other things. He is nicked up, but he has other things on his mind. I don't think he'll play. I don't think that they think they need him to play against us in the pass game.
Wow.
So I hate to say that, but I just don't.
Well, I mean, you're talking about a team that fired its receivers coach on Sunday. I mean,
correct.
I mean, to be fair, I mean, maybe hopefully Auburn can prove them wrong, but I can understand why a team would take that, you know, would have that viewpoint after Auburn has struggled to throw the ball the last 2 weeks and Cornelius Williams gets fired.
Well, I'm just going to tell you, number one, if you think that they're going to sit back and play the same kind of defense they get against Mississippi State on the road last week, you're mistaken almost as much as Dan Peck saying that people may be asleep.
That's right. The 8 o'clock's too late for folks in Baton Rouge. All right,
there's some people that probably will have their second win very well by 8 o'clock. It's not a play. I would rather play them. I like the 2:30 time. That catches them in the wrong time. They don't know when to get up or when to take their nap. At that time, they don't know. 11 o'clock, they know. 8 o'clock, they know. So it's going to be interesting. And I've been in there way too many times.
Yeah,
I've seen too many crazy things happen.
Well, I think you can probably get ready for another one this Saturday night. I just have this feeling the 2021 may join the list of odd numbered Auburn LSU games that you remember for a long time.
I hope if we have a chance to kick for the win, it goes through the uprights, not ricochets off of it. That's all I hope.
Yeah, please.
All right, guys.
All right, Tex.
Thanks.
Great stuff, man.
All right, bye-bye.
334-321-1390. And Dan is up next. Hey, Dan.
Hey, guys. You know, that's a lot of interesting stuff from Tex.
He lives it, man, every day.
I was on Tech side. I thought by 8 o'clock they'd probably be about to die. I mean, I can't even imagine.
He's right. That is professional. That is hard.
He changed my mind, Dan.
Yeah. Well, you know, a couple of things. I went back and rewatched the game, and, look, obviously we let go of the receivers coach. The other coach that has taken over has been there since February, and he was coaching the receivers with that coach. So at least what I've read on it. So I don't think he's unfamiliar with anything involving it. And if he's been with Harsin before, where he was good enough to become the offensive coordinator, then obviously Harsin believes that he can correct all the issues that we're having. And if you don't think that there's a lot of issues, I mean, I know Sally came on there and said, the receivers are doing okay. I don't know. I mean, you're having false starts. They're running the wrong patterns and we're dropping balls. I mean, and it's across the board. It's not just one guy. I'm hoping Javarius Johnson was going to do well. And I mean, he dropped two balls that were right in his hands that he should have caught, not to mention the other guys. And, it was strange on the last drive. We got Elijah Cannon in the game and he barely played this year so far. So I didn't really understand, of course, I've been hoping he would get on the field, and he obviously showed that he could do it, But there was another play where Bo dropped back to pass and 27, or a running back, he was supposed to block the linebacker because the linebacker was blitzing, and he got totally de-cleated right back into Bo, and Bo had to just get rid of the ball immediately. So, there's so many different factors going on. Being a quarterback right now, there's so many things that need to be corrected, and I guess if, Harsin didn't feel like it was going to get done, if you listen to what he says, it's like, look, it's like I don't have a problem with someone making a mistake. Just the next week, let's not make that same mistake. So apparently we were having the same issues over and over and over again, and just, that seems like that's what happened in that case.
So what do you think is going to happen at quarterback? What do you think Auburn's doing Saturday night, Dan?
What I think should happen is I think Bo needs to start, but I would probably run some packages with Finley just to get him in the game, some easy stuff, whether it's some quarterback sneaks, whether it's, some easy stuff, just to get him kind of get his just like the last caller said, he's going to be jacked up. I mean, he's going to be fired up. And you know what? It gives Bo a chance to redeem himself, but then it gives Finley a chance to kind of calm down, to where if we have to put him in the game, he's already kind of been in the game and he's kind of already in the flow, But I would be surprised if it's not Bo. And Bo is doing a lot of things right. He's just overthrowing a lot of the deep balls. But the same thing happened with Finley. So, look, the one thing I didn't understand the last game is Bo didn't run at all. And there were times when Bo could have ran, and he would have probably ran for 50 yards because they were 100% going to make sure that our running backs didn't run the ball, and they didn't. So I think that Bo is dinged up, and I think that they weren't going to risk having him run and hit somebody and then, hurt his shoulder more or whatever the case is. And that could be what's causing him to throw the ball off a little bit. But, there's just a lot of factors. But I think, Bo, look, the reason why you pick obviously went through spring practice. Look, he is the guy. You know, yeah, he's missing a few things, but a lot of things can be attributed to everybody else on the field. And it makes it really hard. You expect the quarterback to be perfect, and the crowd boos a little bit. But half the time the crowd's booing, they don't realize it wasn't Bo's fault. It was somebody else running the wrong pattern or, you know, dropping a ball or whatever. So, you know.
Well, that's the way it is for quarterbacks. I mean, they're going to get you know, they're going to get probably more credit than they deserve and definitely more blame.
Yep. Anyway, but that's what I think. Just appreciate it, guys.
Appreciate the call, Dan. All right, I went and looked back, and again, it's much smaller sample size, and it's pretty tough competition. But yeah, T.J. Finley started 3 road games last year. And in those 3 road games, he completed just under 55% of his passes for, let's see, about 170 yards a game, 2 touchdowns and 4 interceptions. So, I mean, if you want to just keep pulling the stats, I mean, when you're playing tough teams on the road, it's tough to put up great numbers.
Oh, I think it's very difficult to make the case based on anything from before Saturday as far as why T.J. Finley should be the guy instead of Bo. I mean, if you're going to look at their career numbers, you know, I understand people want to point to, you know, we had Barrett in the last hour, you know, pointing to Bo's stats away from Jordan-Hare Stadium as sort of the end, suggesting, which I couldn't disagree with more, by the way, the idea that it's a foregone conclusion that a Bo Nix team is going to lose on the road, or Bo Nix is going to struggle
Bo
on the
Nix
road.
Lose the Penn State game? Yeah, I guess. I don't know. Some like,
and you're also, when you do that, you're also trotting out numbers from when he was a true freshman starting quarterback. You know, starting games. You know, for a coach who has since been fired, an offensive coordinator who has since been fired. So I don't know. I just think there's. It's not to say that there. I mean, there is something valuable in the stats, but it seems like if you're trying to compare Bo Nix and T.J. Finley. I mean, a lot of it's going to come down to what Brian Harsin and Mike Bobo see out of both quarterbacks this week. I mean, if your mind was made up after Saturday that it needs to be T.J. Finley from now on, then you saw more out of him than I did. That's not to say T.J. Finley can't be the quarterback, but I don't think that it was a matter of there's no question. T.J. Finley played so well that he needs to be the quarterback from now on based on Saturday. I think it's more nuanced than that. And, you know, I won't be surprised if there are, you know, a lot of different variables going into the decision as to who it's going to be on Saturday. And Bo Nix's health is one of them. I maintain that, you know, that's something that matters as far as which quarterback goes out there this coming Saturday night.
Well, I think it definitely would regardless.
Sure. But in the case of, I mean, he might have been pulled from the last game for at least, you know, health may have played some role in it. So
we'll never know.
But you watched the replay of Bo's last play, right?
Yeah, it looked, but that one didn't look like a shoulder. It looked like that's something that definitely could knock the wind out of you. You land flat on your back, on your shoulder pads, on your back.
And maybe Bo Nix had performed to a point where, regardless of what happened on that play, the coaching staff said, we need to have a new quarterback in the game no matter what. It seems a little coincidental that he takes a hit like that, there's a new quarterback in the game, and it's totally unrelated.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know.
It's definitely something that, you know, everybody's waiting, and we will see. We'd love your thoughts. We'll need to get to our first break of hour number 2. Right back with more of your calls. 334-321-1390 as we continue here on the Tuesday Drive.
Russell here from University.
On ESPN 106.7.
And online at ESPNAU.com.
And on Fox Sports Central Alabama at 98.3 FM in Birmingham and Sylacauga. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Tuesday afternoon, 21 minutes after 5 o'clock, and let's get back to the Kia of Auburn hotline, and Alan is next. Hey, Alan.
Hey, afternoon, guys. The previous caller touched on it briefly, but on the last drive in particular, there were 2 plays where the play was blown up. I mean, there were completions by the linebacker just demolished the running back. I mean, the running back had no resistance whatsoever. And I mean, who we got that can stack there and make that block? I mean,
You know, that's a good question. I mean, do they want to keep somebody like a?
Well, Tank Bigsby did not play the entire final drive of the game. They had Jarquez.
I don't know that Tank's 100% either. I mean, I think Tank's dinged up a little bit too. But Jarquez Hunter is a true freshman. I mean, so is Sean Jackson. I mean, Sean Shivers is tough, but I mean, is he somebody you can count on in pass pro all the time, or do you want to keep another tight end back there?
I don't know if there's a tailback we can point to on the team where, like, pass protection is known as one of their strong suits. That's not to say that couldn't. I mean, you know, Auburn has a sophomore and a freshman as their top running back, so that could change by the end of their careers. But you know, right now, I don't know if that's something that you know is a strong suit of any of the possible options in the backfield.
It needs to be, because that was a glaring weakness on the last drive. I mean, it worked out, but you know, it didn't need to be that way. Okay, and with the new receivers coach, can we expect different personnel for different plays now going forward? Do you think?
That's a really good question. We'll just have to wait and see. It appeared that Auburn was doing things a little bit differently there at the end of the ball game against Georgia State.
Seemed like there was and I would also say that it seemed like the way the receivers were used Saturday, when you compare it to, forget about Penn State for a second, just comparing the Georgia State game to, you know, the first halves of the two other FCS group of five, you know, the other out-of-conference games, seemed like Auburn was rotating receivers earlier in the game Saturday. Maybe some of that had to do with Demetrius Robertson not being out there, and so Auburn sort of shuffling to give different players his reps. But it seemed like, yeah, there was already a larger rotation Saturday, and I would imagine, I'd be surprised if it stayed completely the same with a different receivers coach now making the decision about who goes out there.
I'm thinking mainly of the ill-conceived fade route. I always thought you need somebody with some height going after that thing.
I would sure think so. I don't think. First of all, I don't think they executed that very well. But you're right. I'd prefer, if you're gonna throw that, and I still am not a huge fan of that on fourth down.
Oh, no.
That you'd have somebody that you could try to, go up over everybody and get it.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Thanks.
Appreciate the call. We've been trying to look at the timeline. I had a couple of people asking me, well, why didn't Brian Harsin just hire Eric Kiesaw in the first place? Well, because I believe in the first place, Eric Kiesaw was a candidate for the job vacated by Brian Harsin.
Well, I think he was. Well,
he was at least considered.
Well, or he might have stayed as offensive coordinator at Boise State too. There was the possibility of him being promoted to head coach or being retained if he wanted to stay as the offensive coordinator once Andy Avalos got. I mean, I think that.
Well, I'm reading a story where Andy Avalos wanted someone who had more experience strictly with quarterbacks, and last year was the first year, I believe, that Eric Kiesaw had been a quarterback / offensive coordinator. But remember, he's a quarterback coach under Brian Harsin, who was also a quarterback's coach.
Yeah.
So I think Avalos wanted somebody more experienced at quarterbacks, and Eric Kiesaw's strength through the years has been wide receivers. But he was not available when Auburn hired Cornelius Williams.
I think that's correct. I think that during the time when Auburn was interviewing receivers coaches, the first couple of weeks of January, Eric Kiesaw was focused on either possibly getting the Boise State head coaching job or having an important coordinator position on the new Boise State coaching staff. And so, I'm not sure he was interested in interviewing for a position coach job, at the time with Auburn. And then when he found out that he wasn't going to get the job he was hoping for at Boise State, or the job he thought he might get at Boise State, there was an analyst position open.
Right.
I think he
had that relationship with Brian Harsin.
Yeah, and this is just us doing, like, internet sleuthing here and trying to piece the timeline together. That makes sense as far as – and I can also understand, if that's a position where maybe it was important to get someone with ties to the Southeast or – the Southeastern Conference.
You wanted to have your staff in place for signing day, because this was in January. Yeah. Eric Kiesaw came in after signing day in February.
Yeah, I understand the question, but I also think there could be reasons why Eric Kiesaw wasn't available, when Auburn needed a receivers coach in place.
334-321-1390, and Rob is up next. Hey, Rob.
Hey, agreed with everything Tech said, except who cares if Coach Orgeron is mad because Auburn scored another touchdown late in the game.
Well, he could be mad at Gus. Gus, you know, mad at Gus and his play callers.
Yeah, well, here's the deal. I'd be mad at my defense for not being able to stop it. I mean, whenever people whine about running up, quote, running up the score, that's rubbish. I think you all just try to score every drive, every time you
get the ball. Well, the year before, the year before, LSU put some serious points up on people, and they didn't call the dogs off sometimes until they were in the 50s.
But you know, as far as the receiving, look at Tennessee's receivers. They're having the same problem. I mean, that, you know, Cody Burns is coaching their receivers. And, you know, there's just guys sometimes just it's not a good fit. How long do you have to wait? I wish Bo Nix would become the SEC Comeback Player of the Year this year. But what more do you need to prove? It's like a court case when you take something back on appeal. You know, how many times do you have to go before the court with Bo Nix and show his body of work? You think you're just going to, you know, I guess every blind hog finds an acorn eventually. But go ahead and try, TJ Finley. People say it's too much pressure. My God, that kid lived his whole life for this kind of a moment. This is his time to go down there and shine and take on LSU. I think it's great. So what if they know about him? I mean, this is SEC football, first conference game. Give it a dang whirl. And I think whoever it is for Auburn, we've got to get people. Our receivers have got to catch balls. I mean, you're just throwing balls out there. There's 50-50 balls. I mean, guys are turning inside versus outside on the route. You got to do whatever it takes to get people that win. And coaches need to know, you know, put out or get out. And that's what
Looks like what Brian – does it look like Brian Harsin doesn't believe in that? I mean, that's what we've seen. It's like he's made a change. Made a change during a game at quarterback, makes a change on his staff mid-season. I don't think there's much question Brian Harsin is results-oriented. Appreciate the call, Rob. We have to get to our bottom of the hour break. Jake Crane of the J-Boy Show joins us on the other side. Stick with us here on the Tuesday Drive.
Fox Sports Central Alabama at 98.3 FM in Birmingham and Sylacauga. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive, 27 minutes away from 6 o'clock here on this Tuesday afternoon. Man, things have moved along so quickly today. I haven't even done my daily pitch for in case anybody's going to Baton Rouge and needs a ticket or three, because I've got a pair and a single that we thought people were going to use that are not being used. So if you know anybody that's looking for a ticket or a pair, a single or a pair or three, then you can definitely contact me. All right. In the meantime, there's my commercial for the day. Let's get back to the Kia of Auburn hotline, where we welcome in our regular guest here in the final half hour of the Tuesday drive. That's the one and only Jake Crane from the J-Boy Show on the Volume. Jake, how you doing, man?
Man, I'm doing good. Appreciate y'all guys having me back on, getting ready for what's about to be an absolutely crazy weekend of football.
Oh, well, every weekend has been crazy. I don't know that around Auburn there have been many crazier, where you see your starting quarterback pulled and then a receiver coach, an assistant coach changed mid-season.
And a fourth and goal game-winning touchdown pass in the middle.
Before you head into SEC play.
Yeah, you know, the timing of the whole ordeal with Cornelius Williams, and you know, Bo, too, he did take a pretty big hit. You know, he was kind of airborne, and then TJ came in. I watching that game, I was just, you know, because I happened to watch like 8 at a time. So watching that game, it just kept baffling me just how kind of uncoordinated Auburn looked offensively the whole game. And TJ Finley coming in and having the 98-yard drive. Now, it wasn't beautiful, but it was beautiful the way it worked out. You know, looking at Auburn getting the win and what would have been a devastating loss. But yeah, seeing a wide receiver coach let go 4 games in, I mean, Brian Harsin himself even said it's, you know, not an ideal situation. And just, you know, surprised me, to be honest with you. It surprised a lot of people. But an interesting time at Auburn for sure.
No question about it. I mean, but one thing you said is right. That would have been a devastating loss. A lot of times, I mean, I can remember quite a few seasons, Auburn, but not just Auburn, where teams who turn out to be, you know, sometimes pretty darn good teams nearly lose to a team they had no business even staying with. But it's so much worse. If you win it, then you can put it in the rearview mirror. You can hopefully learn from it. But if you lose, if you add that onto that Penn State loss, that could have just, you know, the bottom could have dropped out.
Yeah, it would have gotten ugly really quickly. And you're right, Bill. Sometimes, you know, it's a wake-up call for everybody. And, you know, coming off the Penn State game, a really emotional game, Georgia State came in here and treated it like their Super Bowl. And they've got guys on scholarship, too. But, yeah, that would have been devastating. And, you know, watching how that game unfolded, I was very surprised. You know, the drop-off that Auburn has at linebacker after Jacoby and Owens is pretty steep. And you could see that, especially in the first half against Georgia State. You know, even Georgia State's running back, Tucker Gregg, I mean, he was the most shot guy in Jordan-Hare Stadium, the way the holes were opening up there in the first half, just on simple stuff, split zone, mid zone, you know, nothing crazy. But, look, you got the win. You can go back now. You know, you rested some guys, too. Thank goodness you got the win when you rested some guys, or that could have looked even worse. But, you know, it's a big weekend for Auburn, and if you needed a wake-up call, which, you know, they shouldn't, but this is definitely one.
Right, and there are so many different things to analyze from the Georgia State game and from the first few games of Auburn's season. I'm glad you mentioned the defense, because that turnaround from the first half to the second half, you know, is a big reason why Auburn won that football game. I mean,
300 yards in the first half, and then they had 65 until the final 20 seconds.
And yes, Auburn did get Jacoby back, and that's a huge part of it, but it can't be the only thing that was different from the first half to the second half. What did you see from Auburn in that third quarter defensively, Jake?
Well, you know, it was pretty simple, and you see how valuable Jacoby is, but the defensive line actually started getting, you know, pressure and getting off blocks. If you watch in that first half, Auburn's just engaging. You know, like it's a interesting conversation up front. They're just engaging. Nobody's trying to get off blocks. They're just like, okay, I'm somewhat in my gap. That's going to be okay. Because honestly, I think they're used to Jacoby and Owen cleaning it up. And, you know, the way that Auburn runs their system, sometimes they try and two-gap and all that stuff's great. But when that's not working and your linebackers look lost, you got to start penetrating. I mean, you got to start trying to disrupt. And Auburn's defensive line has to get more disruptive, not only against the run, but against the pass. And you know, I know they rushed three a lot against Penn State, but even when they brought forward, even when they brought pressure, guys weren't getting there. The one time Jacoby McClain pressured Clifford in the first half when he, you know, wasn't really spying him, but took a chance, the guy just threw one up and it was a pick, even though it was right before the half. That was kind of Sean Clifford's MO. You know, if you watch the Wisconsin game, when they got to him, just like most quarterbacks, he's not afraid to put the ball in harm's way. But I'm going to tell you right now, Max Johnson is a guy, he's the same way. Go back and watch the UCLA tape. Go back and watch the Mississippi State tape. There's one time, there's a touchdown they threw on a mesh.
The tight end
caught the ball. That was going to be a pick. Like, he was throwing it to what we call the overlay guy, the guy on the top, and he underthrew it and threw it inside. And just so happened, the tight end was there to pick it off. That's why nobody touched him for the next 40 yards, because everybody was shocked because the ball wasn't going there and guys were breaking on the ball. But if you pressure Max Johnson, if Auburn could get pressure with four, guys like Derek Hall have to step up. Colby has to step up. I don't expect Tony Fair to be a pass rush specialist. You know, I'm interested to see if J.J. Pegues can progress. Somebody has got to go get the quarterback in Auburn. Somebody's got to go get him.
And I wonder if Johnson, you know, if you're looking for differences between Johnson and Clifford, maybe Johnson trusts his athleticism a little more, you know. He might try to outrun some guys where Clifford is looking downfield to get rid of the ball. But I agree with you, Jake. I mean, I don't want to, you know, we could eat crow if Max Johnson, you know, goes out and looks like Johnny Manziel on Saturday night. But I agree. I mean, he seems like he is overly willing to take chances with the football and put it into really dangerous spots. You know, maybe he trusts his supporting cast a little too much. And he kind of reminds me of, like, 2019 Bo Nix. Like, do you see what I'm talking about? Yeah.
Yeah, no. Again, you know, kind of running from ghosts. Watch Zach Calzada. That'll remind you a lot of early Bo Nix. I mean, he's running away from Casper and the Snuffleupagus right now. But if you look at what happened to Max Johnson, you go back through fall camp, LSU's defensive line, and you don't hit the quarterback, but quarterbacks have clocks in their head. Just like every quarterback in every system, you have a clock in your head. because the offense is depending on timing and rhythm, especially the passing game. That's just how it works. But in fall camp, they couldn't block the LSU defensive line the whole time. So his clock was really sped up. That's why you saw, if you go back and watch the UCLA tape, I mean, he's double clutching the whole time in the pocket. It just doesn't look natural because his clock's all sped up. That's why you got him leaving the ball to tight ends that aren't even turned around, and he's throwing the ball behind his back. That's the same guy. And if you watch Max, when Max, just like every quarterback in the world, has time to go through his progressions, he's a really good quarterback. There's a reason he's at LSU. But his clock still isn't right. And if I'm Derek Mason, this dropping three stuff's done. I'm going to have to start heating some guys up. Now, you do have to kind of rob Peter to pay Paul because Kayshawn Boutte's out there. And if you put Kayshawn Boutte in man coverage the whole time and you're blitzing, you can pay for it. So even if it's a disguise every now and then of a blitz, I mean, really showing it and getting out of it, if you can eliminate that, because LSU struggles to run the ball, guys. And if Auburn can't stop LSU from running, it's going to be a long season.
For a long time in Sesame Street canon, Snuffleupagus could only be seen by Big Bird. I believe now they've made it to where everybody can see Snuffleupagus on Sesame Street. They may have changed that in the last couple of decades.
Allegedly.
Yeah, that's my understanding. Your mention of Snuffy had me wondering what the official canon is of whether or not he's a ghost in
Old
Sesame Street.
Snuffy. Let's just go with that.
I'm with you. I've seen Follow That Bird. I know what you're talking about. Moving to the Auburn offense a little bit, because we've talked about how the Auburn defense matches up with Max Johnson and LSU. A lot of focus on quarterback, and maybe we can conclude with what do you think Auburn should do with T.J. Finley and Bo Nix. Let's talk about the run game a little bit, because folks were
it wasn't there Saturday.
Yeah,
right.
I mean, folks
not
were
the way it has been.
Concerned.
I mean, a week ago it was the feeling from a lot of people was, well, Auburn could run on anybody. Then they couldn't run on Georgia State.
Well, look, if you go back, we have to make sure we understand a couple things. Number one, Tank Bigsby is really, really good. And he's really, really good in a way, and they actually talked about this before the game, Herbstreit did a little bit. He's really good in a way that isn't just breaking tackles. He makes cuts, and he sees things that it's almost impossible unless somebody is in his face that he's not going to get positive yardage. And it can kind of get lost when you see, oh, Tank ran for 102. But if you go back and watch the film, especially the left side of the offensive line, really struggled against Penn State, even in the run game. I mean, in zone, Tank and Jarquez played out of his mind. That's it. He's next up. You can go ahead and pencil that in. But this offensive line, you know, and Akron was horrible. Alabama State, not very good. But don't forget, guys, they didn't exactly come out of the gate great against Alabama State either. This offensive line was a huge question mark going in. But when you look, you know, to me, Nick Broms is a good player. But outside of that, everybody else has to step up. And it's not going to get any easier. So going against this LSU defensive line, they have talent. We know LSU always does. But looking at it offensively, here's kind of the conundrum that Auburn is in right now, if you really look at it. There's really no guy in the wide receiver group. There's no Kayshawn Boutte right now, or Jahan Dotson, or a Mechie, or somebody in that receiver group that you could say, you know what, if it comes down to it, like a Seth Williams, I'm going to just give this guy a shot, and he'll probably make a play or get me a pass interference. Auburn doesn't have that guy right now. So you can't sit here and say, all right, well, we're just going to throw ourselves the win. The offensive line struggles to run block and pass protect. So you've really got to try and find ways, if you're Mike Bobo, to take the wins where you can get them. And that's to the tight end. That's, you know, going out of different formations and motioning to show what the coverage is. Just even if it's just short throws. That's why you've seen Auburn hadn't had a ton of success down the field throwing the ball, because they really don't trust anybody. So it's a hard spot to be in. Now, can you go to LSU and confuse them? You can. That secondary and Auburn secondary have both really struggled with communication, and whether Stingley's back or not, I don't see that changing. So there's a chance there, but just the personnel at Auburn is what it is right now.
And so I think that leads us to, you know, you look at how the running game's going to respond. A lot of it's going to have to do with what they're getting out of the passing game. I think it's there's going to be a lot of speculation about what Brian Harsin should do and what Brian Harsin will do this Saturday at the quarterback position based on what you've seen so far. What do you, I guess answer both of those questions, Jake. What do you think he should do? What do you think he will do?
Well, and again, I heard you the first time. I just kind of got a little long-winded in the formational emotional stuff. But look, if it's me, if you look at T.J. Finley, okay, he did a great job coming in on that last drive, but he was in there a couple drives before. So it wasn't like he went in there and went 3-for-3 right down the field, and you're like, there's no reason I have to start this guy. But then you have the other side where, you know, the team saw him do the game-winning drive and this, that, and the other. Mm-hmm. If it's me going down there and you're going to Baton Rouge playing at night, a place where TJ Finley transferred from. That is just an emotional experience, regardless if he was playing or not. But if you go down there and name him the starter, it's either going to go of one of two extremes, either really, really, really good or really, really, really bad. And if you start Bo Nix, a guy that's been in that environment, he understands it, and you give him a couple series and you see how it's going. And if it's going good, you leave him in there and let him keep riding. And if it's not going good, hopefully TJ's a little bit calmed down by the time you put him in there so he can go in there and operate. I always say, you know, like in college basketball, guys, we see it every year. There's a college basketball player that started the year before or maybe started earlier in the season, and then they start bringing him in as a sixth man and he starts balling. Sometimes it's like that when you're having a break in a new quarterback. If you decide to make that change, you don't want to just bring him in there in the biggest moment ever of all time right off the bat where he just transferred from. So there's a lot of different things going on. I would let Bo go get the first couple drives, see how it goes, and if it's stagnant or he's turning the ball over or he's trying to win the job again by doing crazy stuff, then you got to make a move, and you hope by that time it's not too late. But again, it's not a sure bet either way. They're just going to have to see how the week of practice goes. But from an outside looking in perspective, that's a lot of emotion for TJ Finley. And Ed Orgeron, if you see, this is just the mind game that get played. Ed Orgeron keeps talking about it. Mm-hmm. He talked about how TJ Finley cried in his office and how much he loves LSU when he had to leave. And then today, talking about, well, if you can sack your son, you can sack TJ Finley. We know what he's doing. It's the same thing that Nick Saban did going on the Manning cast to recruit Arch Manning. This is 6D chess when you get to this level. Don't think that Ed O loves TJ Finley more than he loves being the head coach at LSU, because if he loses this one, he's back on the chopping block.
All right, there's no question. That is great. Some great points there, Jake. A couple of other ball games. I mean, it is a fun day around the country, especially in the SEC. First, Arkansas got any shot? I can't see how they can stay with Georgia. But
well,
then
I've
been wrong about them, you know, plenty of times this year.
Yeah, you know, you got to look at the circumstances. I mean, Arkansas against Texas and Texas A&M played very, very physical games. I mean, going into the A&M game, they didn't know if their center, the Schomburg kid or the Dalton Wagner kid at right tackle, were even going to play. Burks is really beat up. KJ Jefferson had to go out of the game a little bit. Burks had to go out of the game a little bit. He came back in, and a big part of KJ Jefferson's game and Arkansas's run game is the threat for him to run, whether it's any zone read action, whether it's any token fake action. You got to respect it as a defensive end or an outside backer, jack, whatever you want to call it, because if you don't and he pulls it, KJ can actually hurt you. He can hurt you in the pocket if it breaks down. Quarterback draw, if you're in two-man, you're worried to death about it if the back flares out because the linebacker's got to take him and nobody's there. So when you don't have that element and you can make yourself almost one-dimensional, because while KJ Jefferson has progressed as a thrower faster than what I thought after what I watched last year, he's still not there yet. The windows this week against this defense to throw into, don't even talk about Jordan Davis and the rest of the guys from Mordor on Georgia's front running at you relentlessly every play. I mean, the Carter kid is unreal. I may draft him before I draft Jordan Davis, as crazy as that sounds. But when the windows are that tight, I don't think KJ can make those throws. They're beat up physically. Georgia basically had a bye week against Vanderbilt, who scored as many points as Ole Miss did, who was actually on a bye week. JT Daniels got out of there after the first quarter. We had Jamari Sawyer on the show today. They're all rested up, smiles on their faces.
Right.
There's a reason that line is 18.5, mm-hmm. and I think it could get ugly, but that should take nothing away from what Arkansas has done so far and what Sam Pittman and Kendall Briles and Barry Odom and them have done down there, because it's been an unbelievable turnaround for them, and they do things the right way, and Sam Pittman's a guy that really deserves it.
Yeah, they're absolutely headed in the right direction, but yeah, this is more than a bump in the road this week. On the other hand, in Tuscaloosa, man, how many points? I don't think they'll get to as many as they did last year when they set a record for the most points scored in regulation. But there are going to be some points on that scoreboard this weekend.
Yeah, and you know, Bill, I always say don't use the yearly transitive property, especially if you're gambling on the game. And last year when defenses, you know, number one, Ole Miss's defense was terrible last year.
The worst.
They were about as bad as you get last year. And you mix that with not having a spring, not having a summer, really not having a true fall camp with all the COVID testing and contact tracing and all that stuff. It's a little bit different this year. But it's also, this is a different Alabama offense. If you look, I mean, the guys they lost off last year's team, and if you watch the pace at which they operated last year, they could go really fast. Mm-hmm. Bama could really go fast because the guys knew where to line up. They understood how to work the offense. They were veteran guys. And this year, they're kind of breaking in some new guys. You know, the Jameson kid from Ohio State's been a big pickup for them, but they're not operating at the same pace. And I don't think that Bill O'Brien wants to give Bryce Young too many things. You could give Mac whatever. You could give him whatever. You could give him the ability to check. So I don't think you're going to see as many points. I feel like this is going to be a 41-31 game. Guys, I'm still just not sold on Ole Miss's defense. I like the Chance Campbell kid. They picked up a few JUCO defensive linemen. I think the number one and number two defensive tackle JUCO kids in the country. I just don't think they have the depth. Alabama's going to be able to run the ball on them. They should be able to. Because let's not get it twisted, guys. Florida played the game of their lives for the last three quarters of that ball game. They really did with the personnel they have, especially on the offensive line. But I don't think it's going to be as up and down. Ole Miss is going to operate how they operate, but I think Alabama is going to establish the run, because if you can get Ole Miss to go 10, 11, 12 play drives, it throws them out of their rhythm of the game. They want to score quick. They're like a transition basketball team. They just want to score quick, get back on defense real quick, hopefully get the first rebound and go run again. That's what they want to do. You've got to throw them off rhythm, but, I mean, Matt Corral's a witch. He really is.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. Looking forward to another great weekend. Jake, we're just about out of time. Let everybody know about the J-Boy Show and the Volume.
Yeah, for sure. So we have a weekly show. It's on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio. It's called The J-Boy Show. It's part of Colin Cowherd's network, The Volume. And we're talking college football, especially the SEC. We have Bo Nix on every week. I had him on yesterday, as a matter of fact, and he kind of went into depth about what happened and where they're at offensively. So everybody go check that out. Just go to YouTube, type in The Volume, you'll see it. I had another show today, and, you know, we just call it like we see it. And it's going to be a heck of a week. We're calling it Separation Saturday. You know, got Florida, Kentucky. I mean, you just look around the board.
Mississippi State, Alabama, A&M. Georgia, I mean, there are tons of them.
I mean, look, Tennessee, Missouri is going to be a good game, fellas. So Notre Dame, Cincinnati, I can go down the list, but go check us out and subscribe, and it's a lot of fun.
Great stuff, Jake. Thanks again, man. Have a great week.
Anytime. Y'all too. And, Bill, I bet those tickets are already gone.
I'm looking right now, Jake. Thanks, man.
All right, man.
Jake Crane from the J-Boy Show. Yeah, check him out. Just you can go to YouTube. Type in The Volume, and you can find it. Great stuff there. We need to get to our final break of the afternoon. Back to wind things down here on the Tuesday Drive.
With the right shoes.